You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is the brand spanking new Charlene Schmidt, the 2015 Charlene Schmidt. Charlene Schmidt!
That's right. I'm a little sparklier, a little shinier, a little prettier, and a little more new.
So, yes, this is the first episode of 2015 for To the Journey, and I am thoroughly excited. I'm not the type of person who really gets into the whole New Year's thing or the New Year's resolution, but I'm pretty sure that this is going to be the best year for To the Journey.
Correction, the best year thus far.
That's right, the best year thus far. That is right. Very, very correct, because it's, you know, like, guys, we are in full swing. We celebrated our two-year anniversary not that long ago, and so many podcasts don't make it to 100 episodes or 2 years, or if they do, they start pod-fading. You know, they start doing episodes less and less as time goes on. That is not going to happen to Char and I, at least not right now.
Definitely not in the foreseeable future, because we are going strong, and we have zero intention of slowing down anytime soon. I mean, there's still so much that I can think of that we can still talk about, and so I feel like we've really hit a stride. We're, you know, are we in our third season now?
Is that? I guess that's what you could call it. Yeah, we're in the third season of To the Journey. I like
right.
that.
Right. So, like, Trek shows, we, you know, like, I feel like we've always done a decent enough job, but we're really hitting our groove now. We really know each other. We play off of each other well. We've done this long enough to where we practically know what the other person is going to say at this point. And so we can just roll along and spank these things out, and it's a good time. We still enjoy doing it, and it seems like the listener base keeps growing and growing and growing even more. So I feel like 2015 is just going to keep getting bigger and better, and I'm very excited for what is in store for this year. I really am.
So am I, because Trek.fm is the biggest that it's ever been right now. We're getting more fan mail. We're getting more fan interaction on Twitter, on Facebook, via email. I mean, everything. Like, you guys are speaking to us, and hopefully you have recognized that we're talking back, and we're getting more and more iTunes reviews, and it's just great. It's going to be a great year.
Yeah, and we thank you for all of that support, because that does help keep us going. Keeps things fresh.
And if you look at every other show, except for the original series, season 3 is really when everybody hits their stride. So I think we have some cool things to look forward to.
Totally. And we're going to have cool futuristic-looking shoes, if Back to the Future is any indication.
As well as some shimmering jammies.
Right, yeah. So we have a lot to look forward to. And I think we're going to kick this one off on the right foot. And we are doing a listener-submitted topic by Joseph Michael Scutt on Babel Conference. He suggested, why don't you guys do a Voyager reunion? Like, what would everybody be doing 10 years from now? And I thought, hey, that is a fantastic idea, and that is exactly what we're going to be talking about in this episode.
I think it is a fantastic idea, because one thing, we got a glimpse of it in Endgame, but as we know, those events are never going to happen, because there
Not
was
anymore.
An alternate universe, and Admiral Janeway went back in time and altered time and gave the temporal police a headache.
And again.
So we are here to talk about what is going to be, or what we think is going to be, 10 years from now after Endgame, which
yes.
is in the prime timeline. And
right.
so it's 10 years into the future, which is actually a shorter amount of time than how long it's been since, in the real world, how long it's been since Endgame.
Right, yes.
But 10 is such a nice round number, so I think we're just going to stick with that. And so where are they meeting? Where are they meeting on a random starbase? Are they meeting on Earth? Maybe San Francisco?
I think so. I think Starfleet headquarters would have a nice, big, ceremonious reunion for them. Like, kind of make it a gala event.
Okay. All right. That's what I was thinking, too. And so, like, when you have that many people, because, like, I remember in Endgame, we saw it, and it was in, like, it looked like it was in somebody's home. And I was like...
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's more to the Voyager crew than just the bridge crew, you know? Right. Like, there's 170 people, and so... Like, after 10 years, you're going to have marriages, you're going to have significant others, you're going to have children. You know, like, you could have extended family come, like, or, you know, like the family that you had on Earth, like, oh, this is my aunt and uncle, you know, like, or, you know, like, you could have so many people that are brought, so you could easily have 500 people there.
Right.
After 10 years. I mean, maybe that's a bit of a high number, but you'd have to rent a banquet hall. You can't just have 500 people in one person's house.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I was thinking more like huge freaking banquet hall, and they make a ceremony of it where we open up with, I think, even a speech from, and of course she's going to be an admiral, Admiral Janeway.
And, you know, admiral, of course, because we saw that in Nemesis where she's
right.
talking
that
to Picard.
Canon.
Yeah, and so that's canon right there. We don't even have to go to Homecoming.
Right,
the novels
yeah.
to get that.
Yeah, we don't have to borrow from the novels. And I don't know if you did or not when you kind of formulated your expectations, but I tried my best not to.
Yes, I actually, you have read more of the novels than I have. And so it was a little bit easier for me not to draw upon them.
True. So, yeah, I wanted to stray a little bit from that just because it's its own thing. It already exists. And I didn't want to be a little copycat.
Right, absolutely. And so, okay, so we're setting the stage. San Francisco, big banquet hall. Let's say dusk. Okay, let's say dusk.
Sure, okay.
It's, everybody's there. It's the cocktail hour, and everybody's mingling, hugging, and saying, oh my God, you look so old, you got fat, you know, but in a nice way.
Poor Tuvok.
And then all of a sudden, we hear the cling, 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 cling.
Mm-hmm.
And... So you think the first person who's going to speak is Janeway? You think
totally.
That's the first
person? Totally. I mean, she was the captain. Now she is the admiral. Of course she's going to lead this thing. And she's okay. going to give a little speech and then end it with a toast.
All right. So Janeway is giving the speech. We don't need to talk about what she's saying in the speech, but let's figure out where she is, what she's doing. Char, in your mind, what's going on with Janeway?
Well, Janeway's definitely, you know, rah-rah Starfleet, I think, still to this day. She might have taken a little bit of a break after Voyager just to kind of maybe calm her nerves a little bit and reevaluate, ponder what her next move was. But ultimately, I thought she would stay in Starfleet. And I figured as she rose in the Admiralty ranks, she would become incredibly important, probably staying at Starfleet headquarters. And I was thinking maybe even a little bit of a guest lecturer at Starfleet Academy. Because we did see that a little bit in Endgame. And I thought, that seems very fitting because she has firsthand knowledge of things that really not many other people do. And so she would probably run several lectures or even maybe like a special topics class or something talking about Delta Quadrant stuff that really only she knows. Mm-hmm. And the reason why she's in San Francisco and not on a ship or way out in deep space anymore, because she's been there and done that. She's, of course, married to Chakotay, and they have two beautiful babies. So she's got to stay home a little bit, but she's very important. But at the end of the day, she does get to go home at night.
Okay.
So she's managed to have that balance, to have it all.
I don't know why I'm surprised that
you should not be surprised.
Married in your
at all.
Eyes.
Come on, that's the most predictable thing I could have possibly said.
For some reason with me, that wasn't the first thing that came to mind, and I don't know why. I think it was that whole horrible thing that we had between Chakotay and Seven. And
No.
I mean, like, before we even get to Chakotay and Seven in our lineup, we're just going to both say that just didn't happen. Or, like,
erased.
They broke up real quick after Endgame. They were just like,
right.
You know what?
I suppose that's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they that shake happened. Hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
Eh, see ya.
Then they're gone, yeah.
So what would you have Janeway doing then?
Well, okay, so here's the thing, is that I love I kind of shared your same sentiment where she has so much knowledge that nobody else has, except for the Voyager crew, that she needs to use it somehow. And so I feel like she has a very long debriefing at Starfleet Academy.
You know they grilled her.
I say that this takes a year, if not more, of debriefing. Mm-hmm. Because think about, they were over there for 7 years. This is not just a casual conversation that you have in an afternoon. This
right.
is where they go through teraquads of data that they gathered, and they set up their own institute where it's the Delta Quadrant Institute of, like, where they talk about what they know about that part of the galaxy, because no one's ever been there before except for the Enterprise at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they set up this institute, and Janeway is the head liaison of it, and she's kind of like an administrator of it, where they go over what they know, and they go over how they're going to get back. And they talk about what they're going to do and how they could set up star bases there, and when they set up star bases, who they can talk to, who the friendlies and who are the enemies and who they need to stay away from and everything like that. Now, this is not like, okay, we're going to do this year. This is like 50 years from now or 70 years from now, when they can get back to the Delta Quadrant, or how they're going to research new means. And so they're already planning for almost a century in the future of what it's going to be like.
Wow. Ambitious.
And so I think the reason why I think like that is because 6 months ago, my 2015 schedule was already full on what I was going to do at work.
So
I'm like, if that's the case for my small aspect of the universe, just imagine how it would be for something like that in Star Trek with the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah.
And so she's there, and she's teaching some classes on the side, and she's the liaison to this new Delta Institute. But I've always considered her, like, she just gets restless, and she's kind of like Captain Kirk in the motion picture, where she just can't stand it. Like, she just does not want to be behind a desk anymore. And so what she does is she develops her own fleet. And so she has the flagship of that fleet, and she kind of uses flagship in the appropriate naval term, because we never really saw that in Star Trek. Like, the flagship was, like, the flagship is supposed to be an admiral's ship, and that admiral runs their own fleet. And in Star Trek, the flagship was really just the coolest ship, you know, like it was a, like it
True.
Was the ship that they ran on all the missions and everything like that. And so she develops her own fleet, and she does her own missions, but she doesn't really go into deep space so that she can come home every once in a while. And I don't have her hooked up with Chakotay just yet at the 10-year mark.
Even after 10 years?
Even after
Seriously,
10 years.
Seriously, how long is this going to take?
No, this is a long, long flirtation, and I'm
oh
not
my
saying
God.
I'm not
I'm
saying
die.
That they didn't try it. I'm not saying that they didn't try it. I say that they tried it, and they were together for a while, but it didn't work, and they stopped it before they ruined things, and now they're super close, but every once in a while they'll have dinner and wonder what it would be like. So it's still that palpable sexual frustration.
Oh, man. Okay, so they're still flirting, but they're still in the friend zone.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm so disappointed.
All right, so speaking of Chakotay, so where's Chakotay sitting in this banquet? Is he sitting up on the stage? Is he sitting in the audience? What's going
on? Oh, yeah, he's right next to Catherine in my view, because they're kind of a power couple. You know, they're the Jay-Z and Beyonce of Starfleet.
Gosh.
You know that they are. Come
All right, what's he? Okay, so they're married. They have two beautiful kids.
Yes.
But what is he doing? And is he still in Starfleet? Is he? What's going on?
No, I didn't think I didn't think really that Chakotay would stick with Starfleet. That's one thing in the novels that I don't necessarily agree with. He's much more of a homebody, and fanfic does this a lot. But I think it makes a lot of sense. He'd be teaching at Starfleet Academy. He would stay connected to Starfleet. He would have a lot to offer as an instructor, but he doesn't really have a desire to go out into space and explore anymore. I mean, he was kind of dragged into that for 7 years, and now that the Maquis are gone, he has no reason to be a freedom fighter. His home planet doesn't even really exist anymore, and so really, it makes sense that he's on Earth. He is happy with Catherine and their children, and that way he can spend more time with the family. And then that way, if for whatever reason, if Janeway has to go out into space or something, he's Mr. Mom. He stays at home with the kids, and he's very happy with that. He's very content with his family and what he does for a living, and that's Chakotay. He's finally at peace. The angry warrior is no longer.
I like that. I have something like that a little bit where he's not. The thing is, I have him not connected with Starfleet whatsoever. Like he's
okay. What's he doing?
He's out of Starfleet, and I have him in South America where he tries to. He is studying the tribes that have never been contacted before, that are still in Earth, and so he's working in anthropological endeavors. He's trying to investigate old and ancient cultures because, let's face it, I mean, no matter how far we go into the future, there's still going to be things that we can learn from ancient races that are no longer. And sure. he tries to study the I always imagine him on one of those duck blind missions like we saw in Insurrection.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so, because I'm always fascinated by that, where we see that there are still tribes out there right now that don't have any modern contact, where it's the tribes that get freaked out when they saw a plane, you know, fly over, you know, there's no modern contact from the modernized world. And so people are like, well, let's leave them alone. Well, now we have the technology to leave them alone, as well as investigate their culture and learn more about our own and where we came from and things like that. And I see Chakotay involved in that, but still coming home every once in a while to hang out with his buddies in Catherine.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that. That's a fantastic path for Chakotay to take and make that whole floating interest in anthropology that he sort of had on the show more of a real thing. That makes a lot of sense for him. That's very good.
And now he has the time to do that because he did the space thing. He did the insurgent thing. He was the Maquis thing, and now he can pursue other interests because he's home and it's the future and it's perfect, and so we get to do whatever we want to do.
Right. Yeah, and it's kind of a quieter life for him, which I definitely think Chakotay would seek, especially after 7 years in space. He would just really want to be in one place for at least a little while.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. All right, well, I kind of have a little bit of a triad when it comes to Tom Paris, B'Elanna Torres, and Harry Kim, because they're all going to be working together in the future. Now, it didn't start out that way. Like, they all kind of went their separate ways.
They all share
ways.
An apartment. They, you know, it's all sitcom, you know, that kind of thing.
No, because Harry would just be the third wheel. But I figure, you know, Tom and B'Elanna, they're married, of course, but career-wise, like, they probably started out on separate paths, but after 10 years, they sort of came together because they are the best at what they do. And what they are doing is Tom and B'Elanna are sort of like the in-universe Okudas. You know, they work on the new designs for new ships and shuttles. So, of course, Tom Paris test pilots them. B'Elanna works on the engine design, naturally. And then, of course, Harry works on the structural design. Because we saw that in the season 2 episode Non Sequitur, where he was designing the shuttlecraft Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's kind of interesting. I always wish they would have shown, I wish they would have shown that side of Harry a little more. I mean, he did design astrometrics, and so he has some sort of a flair for design, and obviously he is good at it. So these three working together are innovating the latest and greatest in Starfleet ships and shuttles. And I figure the three of them, you know, they obviously have their separate lives, but when they work together, they split their time between Starfleet headquarters in San Francisco and probably Utopia Planitia on Mars.
Wow, I like that a lot. I like that a whole lot more than what I had for Tom and B'Elanna.
What do you have?
Well, no, I mean, like, I want to talk about yours more. Like, that was
Well, I've got a little more because we've got to talk about their kids.
Yeah.
Because Tom and B'Elanna obviously have Maral. But I figured they're going to have one more. Probably a little boy, maybe a couple years younger than Maral.
Mm-hmm.
So he has he's a lot like his dad. And he does have a little bit of an interest in maybe piloting, but he's really showing an interest in acting. Because I figure, like, in the future, holonovel reenactments are going to become a thing where instead of, like, it's sort of like a reversal. you know, instead of you being in the Hala novel, you're going to watch other people reenact really important things.
So like because, a play.
Yeah, but on the holodeck.
On the, okay, so it's a play. This intrigues me. So it's a play, but the thing is, like, you can change the scenery automatically and make it photorealistic because you're on a holodeck.
Right.
That's cool.
So he wants to be a trained holonovel actor. He's showing a keen interest in that, which is fantastic because Daddy creates all sorts of new programs for him to explore and sink his teeth into new roles. And
or to expand upon this even more in the future, we already have motion capture technology for Planet of the Apes and Avatar and things like that. Mm-hmm. So what if we take it even further, where he becomes a holonovel actor, as in, like, they record his performance and his personality for that and all the possible things that he could do and say, and then that gets imprinted into the holonovel. Is that what you're talking about?
No, but that's a cool direction, too. No, I'm thinking people actually go to watch and see, just like you would a play or a movie or whatnot, see somebody reenact, but it is on the holodeck. Like, it's kind of a blast from the past kind of a thing. And yeah. Tom Paris is so retro, he's getting his son into this sort of a trend.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
Just, I don't know where that came from, but I thought, it could happen. It's the future. I can do whatever I want. and I figured for Harry, he is not only finally promoted, but let's give him some happiness in his life. And he's going to finally be a happy newlywed. He's going to marry some very sweet girl.
Not Libby.
Not Libby.
Not Libby, okay.
Been there, done that. That's just in the past. Somebody new, somebody we don't know, but she absolutely adores him and they get along swimmingly. And he's starting a beautiful, brilliant new life. And he's finally got some happiness.
and no space herpes.
And he's eradicated the space herpes. Nothing glows anymore. That's and right. Life is good.
he took his spicillin and he's just fine.
Yes. Now, I even went so far as to maybe talk a little bit about morale. So, do you want me to get into that?
Well, she would be exactly 10.
She would.
It would be her 10th birthday.
It would be her 10th birthday, so this is a big celebration because not only is it a reunion, but it's also Morale's birthday, so you know there's cake. Mm-hmm. So that's good. I figure Morale is going to be a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. I mean, look at her parents. She's the product of a flyboy and a half Klingon planetary jumper. What did they call that?
I can't remember exactly what they called it, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Hopefully the listeners do too. And I figure she's got a keen interest in piloting, just like her dad. She takes after mom in that she likes risky things. Like anytime she does a holodeck program, she wants to do something that's going to give her a rush. And so instead of going on adventures with Flotter, she's going to be doing planetary skydiving with mom. And they're like, Tom and B'Elanna see this and know that this could be a potentially very dangerous thing. And so they're trying to do their very best to let her have her fun, but to teach her how to do it safely. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be doing something very interesting in the future, I think, where like she's going to do something where there is calculated risk. Say like if she's the host of Mythbusters in the future or something, where there's definitely potential for danger, but she's going to know how to do it right. And make something interesting of it. I'm not entirely sure what she'd be doing, but she's going to find some way to satisfy that constant desire for a rush. She's an adventurous little girl.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like all of that. In fact, as I said before, I like what you said about Tom and B'Elanna a whole lot more than what I had.
Long enough. Let's talk about what you got.
Well, I mean, okay, so with Tom and B'Elanna, I like that so much more. I don't even want to talk about mine.
Come on.
Like what I had them on a ship together. I had them where they took some time off. They spent some time with Morale, and they decided to have a new baby, a new child, just like you said. And I think they got the itch to go back on a ship. I have this imaginary thing where 10 years down the line, whoever is commanding the Enterprise E, canonically, it's Data. So I say that like Data is going to go on a deep space mission, and he heard that there's this new power couple
you know, in the Federation, not this new power couple, but he's been trying to get a hold of Tom and B'Elanna and trying to get them on a ship for years. And they finally agree, as long as they can bring their kids. And so they go on this deep space mission, and it's, you know, B'Elanna in engineering, and Tom's not at the helm anymore, but he is, I think he's the first officer by then, okay. Or at least somebody in the leadership. And they love their life on their ship, and they're continuing to explore strange new worlds. And they, like I said, they have another kid. And I didn't really invest too much time into Morale and the other kid, but they're happy. And with Harry, I did not keep him on Earth. I realize, like, when you look at Harry and you look at his drive, I think that's one thing that Endgame got really right, is that Harry would just get right back out there. And
I think so.
I feel like he would just fly through the ranks and and just have tons and tons of promotions. I'd say he's at least a lieutenant commander by now.
Oh, and, God, I would hope so.
And he is just doing really well, and he has his eye on being a first officer on a ship, and he's almost there. And he's just excelling, making new discoveries, and it just, he's out there in space and coming back every once in a while. But yeah, like, but I basically what I want to say is I want to scrap what I said for Tom and B'Elanna, do what you said, but then but do what I said for Harry. Like, I think, okay, Harry's out there in space, flying through the rigs, and Tom and B'Elanna are back home developing new ships and testing them out. I like,
okay,
that.
Fair enough. And then Harry's going to go out there eventually and take them out into the far reaches of the unknown.
That's right.
I could see that happening too. Yeah, you know, Harry, I could see him once he's back home. He might very well, I mean, he got a taste of command on Voyager. He might put himself on the command track. And
I think that's definitely what he's doing, yeah.
I think he would have a very good advantage at doing that and want to fly through the ranks, start, you know, get a first officer job, then become captain, and just have that itch to keep going out there.
Now, Tuvok hates parties, but
he does, but he's there anyway.
He's there anyway. What's he doing?
You know, I think Tuvok would have gone back to Vulcan shortly after Voyager got home, because he's got his family there. He's a grandfather and hasn't even seen his first grandchild, much less the ones that have come after. And I figured he's going to stay there. He's going to reinvest into family life, try and make up for some lost time, and revel in his family, whom he missed terribly over those 7 years. And he can also manage his space Alzheimer's condition,
right,
whatever,
yeah,
that problem was. I don't remember the name. I'm sorry. And I figured for a career, he's probably a high-standing member at the Vulcan Science Academy, something where he's important and he's doing a good job, but ultimately his family is the most important thing to him, and he stays in contact with everybody, but really, he's on Vulcan, and he likes to stay there. That's exactly where he wants to be, and he doesn't really care to go anywhere else.
Once again, you're giving a much better answer than what I came up with. I like that so much more, because, like, I basically had the same thing, but just on Earth, where I said, like, out of all of the people who would stay and teach, it would be Tuvok, because,
well, yeah, that makes sense.
Like,
he
taught before, you know, they want him back, and he has all this extra knowledge now, and so I basically have him moving his family from Vulcan to Earth full time.
Ah.
And but he goes back and forth to visit his grandbabies. And but I like yours a whole lot more. I like that he's at the Vulcan Science Academy instead of Starfleet, and I like that his whole, like, I feel like he would go there because it's the logical choice, because his whole family's there and he has new,
right,
extended family there, and so why wouldn't he go to Vulcan? And so, yeah, I like that a lot more. You and I are definitely on the same track about him not necessarily, like, leaving ship life, leaving station life, and becoming a full-time teacher. I think and spending time with his family, that's definitely what you and I both said, just with different locations.
Yeah, no doubt he would do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Tuvok as someone with any desire to keep exploring deep space, to serve on a ship anymore. I mean, he's done that for so long. Yeah, I think just coming back, he would just want to be with his family. End of story.
Well, we have a few more people to talk about, and I really want to leave the Doctor for last.
Okay.
Just because I feel like his options are limitless. But let's. But you can't talk about the Doctor without talking about Seven.
Right.
I think nowadays, and so Seven, is she there? Is she not?
Oh, you know what? Seven was the very last person whose fate I determined. She was a big question mark for me for quite a while. I thought, what would Seven do? What would she do? What would she do? What would she do? I felt like there were quite a few avenues she could take. Here's what I thought is she tried to live on Earth with her Aunt Irene for about a mm-hmm. year or so, tried to acclimate to life on Earth and live among humans and really solidify her humanity, but she concluded that it never really suited her, and so she did a very human thing, and she started paving her own way in life and finding out what really makes her happy.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to venture out and do something else and go somewhere else, and she went to a place where she could be like just a face in a crowd of many races. So she's not identified as an ex-Borg. I figured she'd go to a station, probably like Deep Space Nine, that's on the far reaches, serves as a hub for the area it serves. And career-wise, I thought she probably wouldn't be a member of Starfleet. I don't even know if Starfleet would give her a commission, but she does work on the station. And I thought, what if she were an intelligence officer? Because she's very analytical. She could analyze data sent by ships that are exploring the far reaches of known space, and she could be working on, like, I don't know, unusual or maybe even potentially threatening activity and alert the proper people. She probably works alone a lot, is comfortable with that and likes that, mm-hmm. thrives that way, and that uses her talents of thinking analytically, and she is super smart, so she gets it right the first time, and therefore she's very valuable. And she's happy with that. She's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I like that a lot. I feel like I've never really pictured Seven in Starfleet, like after Voyager. And I don't know
yeah.
why. I just couldn't put my finger on it because she's literally the smartest human that we know of.
Yeah.
And she has the collective knowledge of the Borg all crammed into her skull. And we even mentioned that in the show about how she's like, yeah, I'm probably the smartest person I know. And...
and she will let everybody know that too.
And but the thing is, like, she can back herself up with that information. So
right,
I kind of stole some things from Star Trek Online with her. I feel like she
okay.
would go to the Daystrom Institute. I feel like she, like, in every think tank in the world wants to snatch her up, and we saw that in
yeah.
the episode Think Tank. And I feel like the Federation would be remiss if they didn't use her knowledge, and not necessarily Starfleet, but definitely the Federation tries to keep her around as much as possible. And so I see her as a key figure at the Daystrom Institute, and she's developing new technologies, integrating Borg technology with Federation technology, and she's doing this full-time now, because they're using her designs on Voyager and kind of bringing them to the rest of the fleet, as well as into people's everyday lives. And so she's the kind of scientist where she can help build a brand new ship, but also make a better microwave. You know, like that kind of thing.
It's true. She can increase efficiency in every area.
And that's what I see her doing. And as far as her personal life, she could never make anything work. The Chakotay mm-hmm. thing didn't work. She tried casually dating, and no one could really meet her on an intellectual level. And also... Uh-huh. Her partners couldn't get in the same vibe as her emotional level, where she was always kind of distant. And so when she's at the Daystrom Institute, one of her goals was to get Data to invest more time Ooh. Into the Daystrom Institute, because they've been trying to get him to help out for a long time. And he kept saying no, But Seven is the first person to make him say yes, and they start a relationship.
Oh, that is too cool. I love that.
And here's the reason why. Is that, like, it was her job to get him to say yes to whatever, you know, they needed him to agree to. She actually gets him to say yes. They start to realize that they're extremely compatible, because this isn't the Data that we knew in the TNG series. This right. is Data with emotions. And, like, yes, Data died at the end of Nemesis, but if you read the comics that are in between Nemesis and the new Star Trek movie, which have been considered canon before fully acclimated to Data's memories. And so Data basically got a second chance at life. And mm-hmm. so he has emotions, and he's an emotional being, but he's still Data. Even though he has emotions, he's still Data. And so
they develop a relationship that starts off as a friendship. They start off as pen pals, and then it starts to grow into something more. And but the thing is that when Data goes on a mission for a long period of time at the with the Enterprise E, it's she's okay because she values her alone time, and she's okay with the emotional distance. But they have just see she's still new to emotions, even though it's been 10 years later. Data is still, you know, like they are both emotionally immature when it comes to somebody who's had to deal with them for their entire adult life.
Right.
And so Seven and Data are there together as a couple at the banquet. Is that long story short?
I love that so much. You just nailed this. That is so fantastic. Because really, maybe aside from the Doctor, the only other person in the whole Star Trek universe that we know of who would be emotionally compatible with Seven is Data. And I never thought about it until it came out of your mouth. That is fantastic. Well done, sir.
To add another layer to it, I don't think she has any interest in children.
No.
And so Data's fine because, like, I can't give you children. So.
Right. I mean, he is fully functional, but...
Yeah.
No baby Datas. That's
no
just
baby
not
Datas,
possible.
No baby Sevens, yeah.
And that's probably okay. They're both very happy with that. They're That's not a problem. I love that so much. That is very cool. All right.
Cool.
Well, let's see. We don't have many people left, and I figure the whole reunion, though, is not complete without a cameo from Neelix.
Oh, okay. So how does that work?
Well, of course, he's got to be there somehow, but he is back in the Delta Quadrant. He's been communicating regularly with his friends, though. He's blissfully happy. He's got wife and his kids. You know, he and Dex have probably had a couple more children after Brax. Brax!
Brax!
And is probably joining the reunion live via satellite just to say hello.
Okay. And so they developed the two-way technology. Like, so they kept Pathfinder going, or
they can FaceTime with the Delta Quadrant. Yes.
Okay.
So he does that. He says hello. He's so happy to see everybody. And of course, the person he's really seeking out more than anybody is Naomi Wildman. I don't know if you went that far, but I thought we have to include Naomi. I figure 10 years in the future, she's going to be a fresh Starfleet graduate, a very green ensign. And so she's often getting advice from Uncle Harry about that long, difficult road to promotion.
Nice.
And what you said about Harry being on the command track, I figured Naomi would probably be doing the same thing. I mean, her ambition was to be the captain's assistant, and I figured that would blossom into wanting to be a first officer and then maybe eventually have her own ship. Her desire is to be the youngest captain in Starfleet history.
I like that a lot. I didn't really think about Neelix. I didn't really think about Naomi. But yeah, absolutely. Because like I can see like Janeway's giving a speech or somebody's giving a speech and she says, I have a little surprise for you. And then the big screen pops up, you know, behind everybody. And you see Neelix and he's fiddling with the camera.
Is this thing on?
Yeah, like his face is really close to the camera. Then he sits back. He's like, hello from the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah. You know, yeah, you know that would totally happen. Everybody would be so happy to see him, and they'd be really glad that he didn't have to cater the event.
Yeah.
So they're really happy to see him, and he's doing so well. He looks so good, and it's just a very happy thing to see Neelix. And, of course, we can't forget Kes. I mean, she'd be there in spirit. She's still floating around in the cosmos, always there in spirit.
There we go. And Neelix makes a mention of that, where he says, he's like,
sure.
He's like, and he says, let us not forget that Kes is one of the reasons why we all made it as far as we did. And let us always remember that she is in our hearts as well as in the cosmos. And they all raise her glass. They all raise their glass to Kes.
That's what, yeah, and they toast to that.
There you go.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that leaves one more person.
One more person, and we could not have a Voyager reunion without the one and only, the Doctor.
Right. Okay, this was another big question mark because, like you mentioned earlier, there's so many options that you could go to, but I sort of borrowed a little bit from Endgame where I figured he's half retired from medicine. Like, he'll make house calls if he's asked, but really, it's not his top priority anymore. I mean, medicine, been there, done that. Like, I figured he would go for the holo novel life. He would really take off after he's done a multi-part adventure series on what really happened aboard Voyager. And once that happened, he became very well-known and famous, and now he's exploring multiple genres, and he really likes mysteries. So he's writing mystery hollow novels, and Tom Paris is just eating this stuff up. He's constantly trying to pry the Doctor for advice on how to get to the next step. I don't know. That's what I came up with for the Doctor. Now, I have a feeling you've got something way better, so please tell me.
Well, I don't know if I would go better, but I did go in a very different avenue, and I do like that you continued with the hall novel aspect, because like towards the end of the show, we definitely see him getting more and more interested in that. Mm-hmm. And but with me, I don't see him ever moving away from medicine. I mean, I remember that conversation that he has with B'Elanna when, you know, he says, he's like, you got to delete these medical subroutines so that I can reach these notes or like sing like this and everything like that. And B'Elanna's like, well, I can do that, but you'll no longer be you. And so I kind of felt that way about how he would have his life goals, where about if he ever left medicine, he wouldn't quite be the person that we know. And I saw, like, he has a name by then.
Oh, what did he pick?
I have no idea. Like,
okay.
For some reason, like, I honestly don't know. I couldn't, I felt, it felt wrong having me choose for him. And even though I'm the writer in this scenario.
Right, you could have just gone with Joe.
Yeah, I could just go with Joe. But I don't see him with anyone right now. I don't see him with anyone. I see him at this 10-year mark, he dates. I see him as a serial dater, where he goes on a lot of different dates and a lot of different people. And I never see him tied down to one woman or a wife just yet. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but just right now he is kind of the cat on the town, you know, like he's just
I totally am adding this to my own canon, because he totally would, like, he's famous, he mm-hmm. is, you know, he's a household name, and he can get all the chicks.
Yeah, exactly. And also, he is the chief surgeon at Starfleet Medical. And he's not an administrator, he is the chief surgeon. He is still in there. He is the one who is, he's basically the house of Starfleet. Like, he's the one that where everyone takes the unsolvable problems to. And he is the first person to, he's the first hologram to have a leadership position at a major institution.
I like it.
And he is a trailblazer in that aspect. And he's still fighting for holographic rights in his spare time. And by being such an influential person at Starfleet Medical, he's able to pave the way in other aspects of his life and in the world for holographic rights and everything like that. And so that's where I see the Doctor.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, definitely.
So there you have it, folks. This is Char and I's idea of where everybody is 10 years in the future from Endgame. This is their 10-year reunion at the banquet hall. Everyone has a fantastic time. They toast Kes. Everybody's there. They have a Skype conference with Neelix. They all raise their glasses. Everybody gets a little silly and a little tipsy, and they all have fun. And everybody meets everybody else. And they said, let's do it again next year.
And every year thereafter.
Every year thereafter.
Yes. But the Voyager reunion isn't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And so I was biased against it. Even when I started buying the two-disc collector's edition DVDs, I avoided buying any of the even-numbered movies.
Odd-numbered movies.
Earl Grey.
Like they stated in the end of the movie, you know, they thought he'd outlive all of them. And I'm like, yeah, that's what should have happened. We should have seen Data, like, in the, you know, 26th century, like Data 5.0, whatever we call him.
To the journey! You don't know if she's going to stab him or smooch him.
She's going to smooch him, of course. After dessert.
After dessert.
We all know what dessert means.
Warp 5.
Along with technology and along with trying to study the origins of a lot of different things that we've come to know in the original series and beyond, it's hard to try and deconstruct it without insulting what has come in all of the things that we know of being Vulcan Mind Meld.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And my thought was, in the next scene, Crusher should have the body of the dead Klingon sitting on the back of her toilet holding a candle. You know, which she would only get to do after Lieutenant Yara has gotten to hold the dead Klingon up to her ear to see if she can hear the ocean.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Everything you would imagine would be in an opening title sequence for this show is in there. I think the shot that really does it for me, the shot that really pulls everything together, is when he dunks the basketball.
Melodic Treks.
So we do know an awful lot of people get associated with Vic Fontaine. He name drops to the nth degree about all the famous people that he hung around with. One of whom is Frank Sinatra.
Axanar, the official podcast.
When there's a possibility for something to be misunderstood or not clearly explained, it can potentially open up a big hole for a show, because people can end up going down a path that was actually not what somebody wanted to be done.
The 602 Club.
What are those Bond movies that you go back to time and time again because they just do it better?
First of all, Matthew, nobody does it better.
That's true.
It makes me feel sad for the rest.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of our shows. We are available wherever podcasts are available, and none of them would be possible without the help of a sponsor. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Well, before we go, we've got a couple of iTunes reviews that we've got to mention. So let's thank Igamino for leaving us 5 stars in the U.S. iTunes store and for writing a short review. And then I believe we have one in the Australian iTunes store as well.
That's right. We have a fantastic review from Shameen Russell, who is in Australia and wrote it in the Australian store. And she did what we want everybody to do. If you are not in the U.S. and you write us a review, send us an email so that we can give you a shout out on the podcast. Thank you so much, Shameen Russell, for their kind words in the email as well as in the iTunes store.
Yes, thank you so much for doing that. And also, one more thing before we go, if you want to help us out personally and support the network, you can do that because we have Patreon, patreon.com/trekfm, where if you become a monthly subscriber, there are awesome little perks in it for you, and it helps us so incredibly much. And we would like to thank our associate producer, Lisa Stevens. You can follow her on Twitter at flip18. And give her a follow. Let her know how awesome she is, because she's helping us out. And it really does help us out in terms of producing and distributing all of our podcasts. This stuff does cost. So thank you very much to everybody who supports us on Patreon. All right. First show of 2015. Already in the can.
In the can and ready to do another one of 2015.
Boom. Let's do it. All right. Where are we going to do next week?
Next week, what we're going to do is something that a lot of people have asked about, and we've done two versions of this before, but people keep saying, let's do more of this, let's do more of this. Other shows should start doing this. And we are doing a Voyager comparison. That is where we take a Voyager episode and a non-Voyager episode and compare the plot, figure out which one's better and which one's not so better. And the episodes that we're going to be talking about are Voyager's Tuvix and Enterprise's Similitude.
Similar stories? But little tiny twists, and we're going to explore all of that.
We're going to explore all of that, but you'll have to wait until next week to listen. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!